We're here after Mr. Worldlywide. Christian turned out of his way to go to Mr. Legality's house for help. But behold, when he got now hard by the hill, it seemed so high, and also that side of it that was next the wayside did hang so much over that Christian was afraid to venture further, lest the hill should fall on his head. Wherefore he stood still and didn't know what to do. Also his burden now seemed heavier to him than while he was in the way. There came also flashes of fire out of the hill that made Christian afraid that he should be burned. And Exodus 19, 16, and 18 talks about Mount Sinai with the flashes of lightning and the peal of thunder and the dark smoke. So it's giving the idea that Christian was trying to work his way to heaven by crawling up the hill of good works given at the Mount Sinai. Wherefore he began to sweat and he did quake for fear. And now he began to be sorry that he had taken Mr. Worldly Wiseman's counsel. And with that he saw evangelists coming to meet him, at the sight also of whom he began to blush for shame. So evangelists drew nearer and nearer, and coming up to him, he looked upon him with a severe and dreadful countenance, and thus began to reason with Christian.
What dost thou here, Christian? Art thou not the man that I found crying without the walls of the city of destruction?
Yes, dear sir, I am the man.
Did I not direct thee the way to the little wicket gate?
Yes, dear sir.
How is it then that thou art so quickly turned aside? For thou art now out of the way.
I met with the gentleman so soon as I had gotten over the Slough of Despond, who persuaded me that I might in the village before me find a man that could take off my burden.
What was he?
He looked like a gentleman and talked much to me and got me at last to yield, so I came hither. But when I beheld this hill and how it hangs over the way, I suddenly made a stand lest it should fall on my head.
What said that gentleman to you?
Why, he asked me whither I was going and I told him.
And what said he then?
He asked me if I had a family, and I told him. But, said I am so laden with the burden that is on my back that I cannot take pleasure in them as formerly.
And what said he then?
Well, he bid me with speed get rid of my burden. And I told him 'twas ease that I sought. And said I am therefore going to yonder gate to receive direction how I may get to the place of deliverance. So he said that he would show me a better way, and short, not so attended with difficulties, as the way, sir, that you set me. Which way, said he, will direct you to a gentleman's house that hath skill to take off these burdens? So I believed him, and turned out of that way into this, if haply I might be soon eased of my burden. But when I came to this place and beheld things as they are, I stopped for fear, as I said, of danger. But I now know not what to do.
Stand still a little, that I may show thee the words of God. See that ye refuse not him that speaketh, for if they escape not who refused him that spake on earth, much more shall we not escape if we turn away from him that speaketh from heaven. Now the just shall live by faith, but if any man draw back, my soul shall have no pleasure in him. Thou art the man that art running into this misery. Thou hast begun to reject the counsel of the Most High, and to draw back thy foot from the way of peace, even almost to the hazarding of thy perdition.
Now let's pause a moment. This man had a burden of the conviction of his own sin. He had a burden that only Christ could take off and relieve. And he was set on the true path to a place where he would get deliverance, Mount Calvary. Now he met Mr. Legality and Mr. Worldly Wise and some other people, and they said they could get the burden off of him without going to all the trouble of going to Mount Calvary. All he had to do, like Mr. Morality said, was to be moral and kind And Mr. Legality, who would show you little rituals like baptism and church attendance, just do these little things and your burden will be eased. You won't feel it biting into your shoulders. But as Christian in good honesty made his way up the hill, Mount Sinai, and the cliff was like this, so he was trying, and he saw that it was ready to fall on top of him, he discovered that there's a problem with a work for your own salvation mentality, which is this: you never know how much is enough. Those who believe that they are saved by good works are ever plagued by not knowing how much is enough. Or, like a Catholic, you could have worked and done all sorts of good works, and then the week before you died, do a mortal sin, and guess where you ended up? In hell. So you could do all the good works, in the end they don't count for anything. Or you don't know if you have enough. And here the Christian was simply stupefied because he was in the way of trying to gain acceptance with God on the basis of his own performance. The moment people think that God will receive them on the basis of their own performance, they are in a work for your own salvation mentality. They are climbing a hill for which certain destruction it is hand. Then Christian fell down at the foot of the evangelist as dead, crying, "Woe is me, for I'm undone." At the sight of which evangelist caught him by the right hand, saying,
"All manner of sin and blasphemy shall be forgiven unto men. Be not faithless, but believing."
Then did Christian again a little revive and stood up trembling, as at first, before the evangelist. Then evangelist proceeded, saying,
"Give more earnest heed to the things that I shall tell thee of. I will now show thee who it was that deluded thee, and who it was also to whom he sent thee. The man that met thee is one worldly wise man, and rightly is he so called, partly because he savoureth only of the doctrine of this world, therefore he always goes to the town of morality to church, and partly because he loveth that doctrine best, for it saveth him best from the cross. And because he is of this carnal temper, therefore he seeketh to pervert my ways, though right. Now there are three things in this man's counsel that thou must utterly abhor. 1, his turning thee out of the way. 2, his laboring to render the cross odious to thee. 3, and his setting thy feet in that way that leadeth unto the administration of death. First, thou must abhor his turning thee out of the way, yea, and thine own consenting thereto, because this is to reject the counsel of God for the sake of the counsel of a worldly wise man. The Lord says, strive to enter in at the straight gate, the gate to which I send thee. For straight is the gate that leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. From this little wicket gate, and from the way thereto, hath this wicked man turned thee, to the bringing of thee almost to destruction. Hate, therefore, this turning thee out of the way, and abhor thyself for hearkening to him. Secondly, thou must abhor his laboring to render the cross odious unto thee, for thou art to prefer it before the treasures of Egypt. Besides, the King of Glory hath told thee that he will save his life, that will save his life shall lose it. And he that comes after him and hates not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be his disciple. I say, therefore, for man to labor to persuade thee that shall be thy death, without which the truth hath said, thou canst not have eternal life, this doctrine thou must abhor. Thirdly, thou must hate his setting of thy feet in the way that leadeth to the administration of death. And for this thou must consider to whom he sent thee, and also how unable that person was to deliver thee from thy burden. He to whom thou wast sent for ease, being by name Legality, is the son of the bondwoman which now is, and is in bondage with her children, and is, in a mystery, this Mount Sinai, which thou hast feared will fall on thy head. Now if she and her children are in bondage, how canst thou expect by them to be made free? This legality, therefore, is not able to set thee free from thy burden. No man was ever, as yet, ever rid of his burden by him. No, nor ever is like to be. He cannot be justified by the works of the law, for by the deeds of the law no man living can be rid of his burden. Therefore, Mr. Worldly Wiseman is an alien, and Mr. Legality is a cheat. And for his son Civility, notwithstanding his simpering looks, he is but a hypocrite, and cannot help thee. Believe me, there is nothing in all this noise that thou hast heard of these sottish men, but a design to beguile thee of thy salvation, by turning thee from the way in which I had set thee.
After this, Evangelist called aloud to the heavens for confirmation of what he had said. And with that, there came words and fire out of the mountain under which poor Christian stood, that made the hair of his flesh stand. The words were thus pronounced: as many as are of the works of the law are under the curse. For it is written, cursed is everyone that continueth not in all things which are written in the book of the law to do them. I think it would be good to have a few testimonies at this point. Did any of you travel down to the village of Mr. Legality and go along with him to the church Morality and sit in the pew with Mr. Civility? Did any of you in your past life think that you were going to gain God's approval by simply being moral and civil and trying to keep God's law, the golden rule, when in reality you were not taking the way of the cross, but you were seeking to work your own salvation out? Any of you have a testimony? Gail?
I think I have to battle with that all the time. I think a lot of it comes from a lot of people in this area are very hardworking, works conscious, anywhere, but at least, people that I talk to and I'm with a lot just have their houses real neat and their yards real neat. And they're just hardworking people, and they, I feel like they can just work circles around me, and I always feel like I'm on behind, or just can't catch up. And Rick has to remind me that just that Jesus has done it all. He's.
Would you say you grew up in an atmosphere in which it was the idea that a person is saved by their morality and going to church?
Right.
And
well, every time I try to witness to my mother, that would be her comeback to me was, you can tell me what you believe by your words, but I'll show you by what I do, and you don't do near as much as I do, she'd say. And just her good works, that's what she's relying on totally. And I just keep praying that the Holy Spirit would convict her, and let her see that that's not right. And I often think to myself and remind myself, well, if I'm going to get to heaven by my good works, then why did Jesus ever have to come? And what would we have need of Jesus? And just have to cry out to him to forgive me. I battle with that a lot.
In Galatians 2, the Apostle Paul said, if righteousness were to come by our observance of the law, then Jesus Christ died in vain. Now, Pei, would you say that even in a Buddhist context, that it's morality, civility?
I think so. That's the way I was brought up. That's what my parents believe. You have to be moral, and that's all that counts. That is all that matters, this life. And even that's what they believe. They don't always practice that. It's something they would like us to do. They would, I guess, they see that as a hope for our future, to be moral, and maybe somehow someone will be merciful to us. I don't know if they believe in the. I would say with the Buddhist background, they probably in life after. This life after death, but they have no assurance of that, and it's something that they're hoping it would happen. If you're moral, that you would not be punished, you would not be going, you would not have to go to hell, and that type of thing.
Does it matter if you're raised in a so-called Christian country or a Buddhist country, or if we had someone from the Muslims here or someone from the Hindus, you would again and again have the same idea that I will find acceptance with God on the basis of my own performance. Whereas Christianity teaches, we find acceptance with God on the basis of the performance of Jesus. We are saved by His good works, by His obedience, by His morality, by His civility. So one Puritan, it was beautifully put, the Catholic persecutors were willing to kill him. They put the knife up to his throat and they said, "Are you ready to confess that we are saved by good works?" And an idea dawned upon him, and he says, "Yes, we are saved by good works." And that was so unexpected. They knew he was being tricky. And they said, "By whose good works?" And he said, it's Christ's good works." And then they used the knife, and that was the end of him. I have no objection to good works as long as they're Christ's and not mine that lead to salvation. Morality is not wrong, but it was Christ's morality that saved us. I have none of my own. And you wanted to say something?
Some years before I was saved, I used to be bothered by the fact that I might not be doing enough good works to make it to heaven. And there was a memorized prayer that we had been taught as children. And I used to say it at night 12 times, go through this thing 12 times and do all kinds of little rituals to try to get right with God.
Do you remember it?
Yes, it's horrendous. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
The universalist humanistic prayer. I can get through it with a straight face. From my head to my feet, I'm the picture of God. From my heart to my hands, I feel God's living breath. When I speak with my mouth, I follow God's own will. When I gaze upon God and father and mother and sister and brother, something or other, and all that's around me, no fear shall come near, only love for all that's around me here. Just a very soothing prayer. Very self-righteous prayer, but it did not help solve the problem.
This is the experience that Christian found. Now, after hearing...
When I fail God, the problem with me is it's much easier for God to forgive me than just me to forgive myself. I know better. I know who paid for my sins. I know they're under His blood. And I go back crying and crying to God to forgive me for something I've done. And I know one time ought to be enough.
Let's get back to Christian's experience. After he heard the sentence from Galatians 3 that the person who is going to attempt to keep the works of the law to be saved end up under a curse unless you're perfect and can keep all of them. So that's it. Nobody can ever keep them all. Now, Christian looked for nothing but death. Remember his hair standing up on end? And he began to cry out lamentably, even cursing the time in which he met with Mr. Worldly Wiseman, still calling himself a thousand fools for hearkening to his counsel. He also was greatly ashamed to think that this gentleman's arguments, flowing only from the flesh, should have that prevalency with him as to cause him to forsake the right way. This done, he applied himself again to evangelists in words and sense as follows. "Sir, what think you? Is there any hope? May I now go back and go up to the wicket gate? Shall I not be abandoned for this and sent back from thence ashamed? I am sorry I have hearkened to this man's counsel, but may my sin be forgiven?"
"Thy sin is very great, for by it thou hast committed two evils. Thou hast forsaken the way that is good, to tread in forbidden paths. Yet will the man at the gate receive thee, for he has goodwill for men. Only take heed that thou not turn aside again, lest thou perish from the way when his wrath is kindled but a little."
Then did Christian address himself to go back, and Evangelist, after he had kissed him, gave him one smile and bid him Godspeed. To he went on with haste. Neither spake he to any man by the way, nor if any man asked him, would he vouchsafe them an answer. He went like one that was all the while treading on forbidden ground, and could by no means think himself safe until he had got into the way which he left to follow Mr. Worldly Wiseman's counsel. So in process of time, Christian got up to the gate. Now over the gate there was written, "Knock, and it shall be opened unto you." He knocked therefore more than once or twice, saying, "May I now enter here? Will he within open to sorry me, though I have been an undeserving rebel? There shall I not fail to sing his lasting praise on high." At last there came a grave person to the gate named Goodwill, who asked who he was and whence he came and what he would have. Could you be Mr. Goodwill too?
Mr. Goodwill, okay.
"Here is a poor burdened sinner. I come from the city of destruction, but I am going up to Mount Zion, that I may be delivered from the wrath to come. I would therefore, sir, since I am informed that by this gate is the way thither, know if you are willing to let me in."
"I am willing with all my heart." And with that he opened the gate.
So then Christian was stepping in. The other gave him a pull. Someone else pulled him. Then said Christian, "What means this?"
"A little distance from this gate there is erected a strong castle, of which Beelzebub is the captain. And from there both he and they that are with him shoot arrows at those that come up to this gate, if haply they may die before they can enter in."
"I rejoice and tremble." So when he got in, the man of the gate asked him,
"Who directed you here?"
"Evangelist bid me come hither and knock as I did, and he said that you, sir, would tell me what I must do."
"An open door is set before you, and no man can shut it."
"Now I begin to reap the benefits of my hazards."
"But how is it that you came alone?"
"Because none of my neighbors saw their danger as I saw mine."
"Did any of them know of your coming?"
"Yes, my wife and children saw me at the first, and called after me to turn again. Also some of my neighbors stood crying and called after me to return. But I put my fingers in my ears and so came on my way."
"But did none of them follow you to persuade you to go back?"
"Yes, both obstinate and pliable. But when they saw they would not prevail, obstinate went railing back, but pliable came with me a little while."
"But why did he not come through?"
"We indeed came both together until we came to the Slough of Despond, into which we also suddenly fell. And then was my neighbor Pliable discouraged and would not venture further. Wherefore, getting out again on that side next to his own house, he told me that I should possess the brave country alone for him. So we went his way, and I came mine. He after obstinate, and I to this gate."
"Alas, poor man, is the celestial glory of so little esteem with him that he counteth it not worth running the hazard of a few difficulties to obtain it?"
"Truly, I have said the truth of Pliable, that I should also say that all the truth of myself, it will appeal there is no betterment twixt him and myself. 'Tis true, he went back to his own house, but I also turned aside to go in the way of death, being persuaded thereto by the carnal arguments of one Mr. Worldly Wiseman."
"Oh, did he light upon you? What he would have had you seek for ease at the hands of Mr. Legality? They are both of them a very cheat. But did you take his counsel?"
"Yes, as far as I dare. I went to find out Mr. Legality until I thought that the mount that stands by his house would have fallen on my head. Wherefore there I was forced to stop."
That mountain has been the death of many and will be the death of many more. It is well you escaped being by it dashed in pieces.
Well, truly, I do not know what would have become of me had not Evangelist happily met me again as I was musing in the midst of my dumps. But 'twas God's mercy that he came to me again, or else I would have never come hither. But now I am come, such as one as I am, more fit indeed for death by that mountain than thus to stand talking with my Lord. But oh, what a favor is it to me that yet I am admitted entrance here.
We make no objections against any, notwithstanding all that they have done before they come here. They in no wise are cast out. And therefore, good Christian, come a little way with me, and I will teach thee about the way thou must go. Look before thee. Dost thou not see this narrow way? That is the way thou must go. It was cast up by the patriarchs, prophets, Christ and his apostles, and it is as straight as a rule can make it. This is the way thou must go.
But is there no turning or windings by which a stranger may lose his way?
Yes, there are many ways, but down. There are many ways, but down upon this, and they are crooked and wide. But thus thou mayest distinguish the right from the wrong, the right only being straight and narrow.
Then I saw in my dream that Christian asked him further if he could not help him off with his burden that was upon his back, for as yet he had not got rid of it, nor could he by any means get it off without help. And he told him,
as to thy burden, be content to bear it until thou comest to the place of deliverance, for there it will fall from thy back of itself.
Then Christian began to gird up his loins and to address himself to his journey. So the other told him that by that he was going some distance from the gate, he would come at the house of the interpreter, at whose door he should knock, and he would show him excellent things. Then Christian took leave of his friend, and he again bid him Godspeed. Then he went on till he came at the house of the interpreter, where he knocked over and over. At last one came to the door and asked him who was there. The house of the interpreter is the teacher. At the beginning of your introduction to Christianity, you need an evangelist, someone who will stir you up to see, make you see your need of Christ, and then you need someone to teach you. See, this is the house of the interpreter held every Sunday morning. Christian, sir, here is a traveler who was bid by an acquaintance of the good man of this house to call here for my profit. I would therefore speak with the master of the house. So he called for the master of the house, who after a little while came to Christian and asked him what would he have. Sir, I'm a man that am come from the city of destruction, and I'm going to Mount Zion. I was told by the man that stands at the gate, at the head of this way, that if I called here, you would show me excellent things, such as would help me in my journey.
Shall I be the interpreter? Come in. I will show thee that which will be profitable to thee.
So he commanded his man to light a candle and bid Christian follow him. So he had him in a private room and bid his man open the door, the which, when he had done, Christian saw a picture of a very serious person hung up on the wall. And this was the fashion of it. It had eyes lifted to heaven, the best of books in its hand, the law of truth was written upon its lips, the world was behind its back, it stood as if it pleaded with men, and a crown of gold did hang over its head. Then said Christian, what is the meaning of this?
The man whose picture this is one of a thousand. He can beget children, travail in birth with children, and nurse them himself when they are born. And whereas you see him with his eyes lifted up to heaven, the best of books in his hand, and the law of truth written on his lips, it is to show you that his work is to know and unfold dark things to sinners, even as also you see him stand as if he pleaded with men, and whereas you see the world as cast behind him, and that a crown hangs over his head, that is to show you that slighting and despising the things that are present, for the love that he has to his master's service, he is sure in the world that comes next to have glory for his reward. Now, I have showed you this picture first because the man whose picture this is the only man whom the Lord of the place where you are going has authorized to be your guide in all difficult places you may meet with in the way. Therefore, take good heed to what I have showed you, and bear well in your mind what you have seen, lest in your journey you meet with some that pretend to lead you right, but their way goes down to death.
Then he took him by the hand and led him into a very large parlor that was full of dust, because it was never swept. The which, after he had reviewed a little while, the interpreter called for a man to sweep it. Now when he began to sweep, the dust began to so abundantly fly about that Christian had almost been choked. Then said the interpreter to a girl who stood by, "Bring some water here and sprinkle the room." Which, when she had done so, the room was swept and cleaned with pleasure. Then said Christian, "What is the meaning of this?"
"This parlor is the heart of a man that was never sanctified by the sweet grace of the gospel. The dust is his original sin and inward corruptions that have defiled the whole man. He that began to sweep it first is the law, but she that brought water and did sprinkle it is the gospel. Now whereas you saw that so soon as the first began to sweep, the dust did fly about so much that the room by him could not be cleaned. But that thou was almost choked by it. This is to show you that the law, instead of cleansing the heart by its working from the sin, does revive, put strength into, and increase it in the soul, even as it does discover and forbid it, for it does not give power to subdue. Again, as you saw the damsel sprinkle the room with water, upon which it was cleansed with pleasure, this is to show you that when the gospel comes in, the sweet and precious influences thereof to the heart, then, I say, even as you saw the damsel lay the dust by sprinkling the floor with water, so is sin vanquished and subdued, and the soul made clean through the faith of it, and consequently fit for the King of glory to inhabit."
In Romans 7, the Apostle Paul said, "The giving of the law provoked sin." Now, an illustration of this is when you were tiny. Those of you who have kids can verify what I'm saying. Here's some books or a knick-knack. Your baby goes on over and completely ignores those books or knick-knacks. Till the day comes, he reaches over and wants to tear the pages out, and you say, "No books." Every day from then on, soon as he's in that room, where does he immediately make a beeline for? The books. Human nature, because it's now sinful, likes to rebel against law and authority. So, for example, when they tried to have prohibition, the seminary that I went to was against having a law forbidding the consumption or manufacture of alcoholic beverages on the grounds that this would produce more alcoholics and drunkenness than ever before. If you tell the pagans you may not drink, then what will they be determined to do more than ever? Drink. So Dr. Machen went on record against prohibition, and the end result, the records have shown that there was more drunkenness and more alcohol consumed when there was the thrill of breaking a law to do it. The thrill of breaking a law is enough reward for some people to do things. And here he's saying that when the law comes in, sin begins to be more horrible, it begins to choke you. But when the gospel comes in, that's like sprinkling water on dust. They have these things you can spray, or have vacuum cleaners that have water, and it shoots the air through it, so the water grabs all the dust, and you don't get the dust back in the room. I have one of those shop vacs. I turn it on, and the first you think is a mushroom cloud of dust. And you have to worry because you got to have to suck that up before you get anything else done. But when you put water down, you don't get the dust. I saw, moreover, in my dream that the interpreter took him by the hand and led him to a little room where there sat two little children, each one in his own chair. The name of the oldest child was Passion and the other Patience. Passion seemed to be very much discontent, but Patience very quiet. Then Christian asked, "What is the reason for the discontent of Passion?"
The governor of them would have him stay for his best things till the beginning of the next year, but he will have all now. But Patience is willing to wait.
Then I saw that someone came to Passion and brought him a bag of treasure and poured it down at his feet. When he took it up, he rejoiced, and he began to laugh, Patience to scorn. But I beheld, but a little while later, that he had lavished it all away and had nothing left but rags. Then said Christian to the interpreter, "Would you explain this matter more fully to me?"
These two lads are figures, Passion of the men of this world, and Patience of the men that which is to come. For as here you see, Passion will have all now, this year, that is to say, in this world. So are the men of this world. They must have all their good things now. They cannot stay till the next year, that is, until the next world, for their portion of good. That proverb, "A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush," is of more authority with them than are all the divine testimonies of the good of the world to come. But as you saw that he had quickly lavished all away and had presently left him nothing but rags, so will it be with all such men in the end of this world.
Now I see that Patience has the best wisdom, and that for several reasons. First of all, because he stays for the best things. Secondly, also because he will have the glory of his patience when the other will have nothing but rags.
No, you may add another, which is the glory of the next world will never wear out, but these are suddenly gone. Therefore, Passion had not so much reason to laugh at Patience, because he will have had his good things first, as Patience will have to laugh at Passion, because he had his best things last. For first must give place to last, because last must have his time to come. But last gives place to nothing, for there is not another to succeed. He, therefore, that hath his portion first, must needs have a time to spend it. But he that hath his portion last, must have it lastingly. Therefore, it is said of Dives, in this lifetime... What? Dives?
Dives.
In your lifetime, thou receive good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things. But now he is comforted, and thou art tormented.
Then I understand that it is not best to covet things that are now, but to wait for the things to come.
You say truth, for the things that are seen are temporal, but the things that are not seen are eternal. But though this be so, yet since things present in our fleshly appetite are such near neighbors one to another, and again, because things to come in carnal sense are such strangers one to another, therefore it is that the first of these so suddenly fall into amity, and that distance is so continued between the second.
I think we can stop here. Do you get the point of what he's saying? People say a bird in the hand is worth more than two in the bush. I want my apple pie now. I want my Cadillac now. Don't talk to me about heaven. Don't talk to me about heaven and hell and afterlife. I don't care. I'm going to enjoy myself now. Is this not what people do today? They don't care about church. They don't care about the Bible. They want their partying now. But you see, they don't realize it won't last. It won't last.